So essentially, there is a crew that's building this piece based on your model?
Yes, actually, it's the first time that I've ever, you know, had a piece realized like this. I've done a number of public art projects. In fact, I just finished and dedicated one at the University of Indiana in Terre Haute, and I'm currently working on a big one for the new airport in Indianapolis. And those are projects where kind of hands-on, where I'm really involved. I may work with some subcontractors or have some things done, but I'm definitely managing the project. The piece in Beijing for the Olympics is completely different. Of course, the factories and the manufacturing capability of Chinese, I guess, is almost legendary at this moment, either good or bad. But they actually buy your idea. In other words, they've given us an artist's fee or an author's fee, and you sign over the rights to them, which was a little bit scary, but I figured at this point it would be worth the adventure. So they have actually had the model there, and they started scaling up the piece to almost 16 feet high. And I was totally amazed when I got there. It was perfect. But given the working conditions, I mean, there were three or four or five construction workers working on my piece, but, you know, without tables, without, it's just kind of on the ground, everything spread all over. It was just like crazy, but you couldn't argue with the results. So it was a major, major eye-opener, I guess. So,
how did you feel seeing other people putting your art together?
Well, you know, it's an odd thing to hand over that part of the creative process. But it's not all that uncommon. You know, I do a lot of work here in my studio in Wells, where I do everything from the design, the welding, the cleaning, the marketing, whatever. But when you get to big, big, big projects like this, I'm talking about scale, you have to delegate some of the expertise to people that can, you know, either do it or handle it or have the room for it. So, for instance, the piece that I finished for Terre Haute, I didn't do the welding on it. I did the design, I did the model, and oversaw, the fabrication of it. So it's actually just a case of delegating work loads and responsibilities. You know, as the artist, you can't do everything. It's just like an architect. He comes up with an idea for a building. He's not going to be out there doing the electric and the welding or putting the windows in or whatever. You know, he's managing the ideas. And so, you know, this piece in Beijing is a bit like that.
We'll post some images, John, of your piece, but I want to give you a chance to describe it to our listeners. Is there a title for it?
Yes, actually, the piece is based on a series of works that I'm doing called Sisyphean Circles, and the series is based on the myth of Sisyphus. Of course, it was a Greek character who had done some transgression, and his punishment was to push this large stone to the top of the mountain, and it would roll down, and he, you know, had to do this forever. And in a certain way, I see that idea, that myth, as a metaphor for a number of things. One, sort of a self-portrait of what I do in the sense of pushing stones around. I'm a stone sculptor primarily, to the top of a so-called creative peak, and it reaches that point, and then it comes down, and you start over, and you go again and again. And it, as an artist, you're never done. Your job is never done. So it's sort of an endless task. But in a way, that seems sort of negative, and I don't mean it to be negative. There's another way to look at that, and one way that I like to look at it is through the eyes of Albert Camus, who's a French existentialist who wrote a very interesting essay on reconsidering Sisyphus and the idea that, you know, the journey was really the meat of the experience. And in a certain way, that's what I see as a creative process. It's not always that final product that you make, but it's the process of getting there. So anyway, I tried to incorporate that idea into the Olympic ideal. In other words, you know, not every athlete is going to win a gold medal, but it's the idea of, aiming for the top of the mountain, training, beating your own personal best, you know, exhibiting the best for your country and for yourself that was most important. So anyway, the piece in a formal sense is a large circle. It's going to be about 16 feet high. It incorporates stone in the center, so it sort of has this piece of stone in a suggesting a kind of spinning or movement and the idea of the Sisyphean idea of pushing it up the hill. Initially, I had proposed 5 circles. Of course, they didn't give you any budget. They just said, you know, make a proposal, and the budget would be determined later. So I wanted to build 5 circles and kind of echo off of the 5 Olympic rings. And, of course, those rings are intertwined as a symbol of world unity. The 5 rings symbolize 5 inhabited continents, although I guess they see North and South America as one continent, and Antarctica, I guess, doesn't count. So anyway, there's 5 rings, and my idea was to use stone from the 5 different continents and incorporate it, bring it to China, and then place them around the Olympic venue in a big circle. So if you're looking down at it in kind of a site plan, you'd be seeing pieces sited in a big circle. Well, they liked that idea, but apparently their budget wasn't that big, and so they decided to do just one piece and use Chinese stone. So that's where we're at with that one.
Are there any local materials being used?
Well, it'll be local stone. Right. Not local upstate New York,
right.
Local Chinese stone.
Chinese stone, yeah.
And Chinese steel. So.
Yeah, right. So, are there other American artists, presumably?
Well, actually, there are. There are a couple other Americans that I had known, a sculptor from Ohio, John Barlow Hudson, a fellow from Rhode Island School of Design, who's the head of sculpture there, Dean Snyder, who coincidentally is going to be doing a one-person show at the Tang Museum over here in Saratoga, part of Skidmore College, and that'll be opening in May of this year, so that'll be something for people to watch for. He's got some great work. There was a fellow from Oregon and a Canadian artist. But in kind of a local sense, the Austrian representative, a good friend of mine and actually lives with me here in Wells, Caroline Rommersdorfer, is building a big stone piece for the Olympics. In fact, she and I had a exhibition this summer at the Lake Placid Center for the Arts in July, August of this year. Uh-huh. And some of your listeners might have had a chance to see that show.
So these are outdoor sculptures. This will be sort of an art park as part of the Olympics?
Yes. Beijing is just a mind blower right now in terms of what they have torn down in the center of the city and how they're rebuilding all these Olympic venues. Unlike, you know, some Olympic cities where they've spread these venues over a huge geographical area, they're in Beijing, they're concentrating them in the center, pretty much in the center of the city. So all of these wonderful new structures, like the main stadium that everybody will see on TV next year. They call it the Bird's Nest. It's this fantastic architectural form of intertwining steel. The swimming venue, which is like a big bubble of plastic, just on and on and on. They're all in the center of the city, and these will all be landscaped with gardens and trees, of course, but public sculpture will be part of the landscape plan and will be situated and sited throughout the whole Olympic Park. I have to say, Beijing was a real eye-opener. You know, we all hear, especially in if you're in manufacturing or, in my case, in sculpture, the price of steel, the price of bronze is going up. It's because worldwide demand, and, you know, you keep hearing about China. Well, being in Beijing, you see where all the steel is going. Every place you look, there's a new building. It's just a total mind-blower. I mean, you drive around for hours like you're in the middle of New York City. You know, I thought New York was intense, but Beijing is just totally over the top. And what's interesting is the dichotomy between the architecture, the progress, and the sort of the way the people, the workers, are living. It's like almost in another century. I mean, still lots of bicycles and horses and just wow.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. It was amazing.
You work in stone and metal, and why those materials?
Well, my work, you know, I actually been working in stone and metal and combining those two materials since graduate school. And for me, it's about joining natural materials with human-made materials and trying to make some sort of sensible amalgam or marriage. I often use stone as a found object. In other words, I'm not carving it in a traditional sense. I accept the stone kind of like in a Chinese, Oriental, Japanese way, where the stone has a spirit of its own, and then I put it together with industrial kinds of steel or bronze. And in a way, I'm kind of, again, merging different philosophies of Eastern philosophy of accepting stone and then kind of an American, if you will, industrial can-do welded steel philosophy. And, you know, I often cite, you know, two sculptors that are kind of at my aesthetic roots, and that is Isamu Noguchi, who's an American-Japanese artist who uses stone in quite wonderful ways, in natural ways, and of course David Smith, who's a fellow Adirondacker who lived in Bolton Landing when he was alive and worked up here and is cited as one of America's top sculptors from the 20th century. So, you know, I put those two materials together, oftentimes suspending stone, getting it up in the air, choreographing it in a way that you might not expect to see stone.
Yeah.
You know, I mentioned the Adirondacks. I grew up here and was very involved in all the things that the Adirondacks had to offer as a kid, primarily skiing. And I actually attended St. Lawrence for my first 2 years and went there primarily to be on the ski team. But I got twisted around, and one of the art professors, Guy Berard, who actually is still around up there, was one of the main influences of getting me kind of twisted in the right direction, I guess. He and Mike Lowe, who taught sculpture there for a number of years. And I often cite St. Lawrence as, and my experience there as the upside of liberal arts education. You're going there for one reason, you come out with a totally different direction, and one that can set you off. So
what happens at this point? Do you check back with the crew working? Do you go back to Beijing?
Well, they're
from time
supposed
to
send photographs of the progression. The interesting thing about Beijing and the Olympics right now is that decisions are being made day by day because, gosh, one of the things that struck me was how much work they still have to do on the buildings and the landscaping and everything else before August 08, of course, when it opens. And they're really in high gear, and like I said, decisions are being made day by day. We're hoping that we'll be invited back one more time to kind of look at the piece and give the final blessing or final okay on it. And then hopefully one more time after the works are installed, maybe all the artists will be back in kind of a unveiling ceremony. But again, none of that was determined for sure, and we're all just kind of waiting to see what happens.